Welcome to the Addiction Solution Podcast. I'm Michelle Dunbar. Enjoy listening and watching as addiction experts Mark Sheeran and I cover controversial as well as helpful topics on addiction, how to move past it, and other related subjects. As two of the co-founders of the Freedom Model, Mark and I will give you a completely new perspective on the topics that matter to you. We will take to task the Recovery Society's lies and misinformation and replace them with facts, research, and the methods to move on from addiction struggles without 12-step meetings, rehabs, and the shackles of endless recovery. Let's escape the treatment and recovery trap together and learn to be free. Welcome to the truth. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Addiction Solution. I'm Michelle Dunbar.
And I'm Mark Sheeran. And together with our colleague, Stephen Slate, we wrote that book, The Freedom Model for Addictions, Escape the Treatment and Recovery Trap.
We got to first talk about our live event that's coming up next week. So this is being released on July 10th, 2026. This is episode 296. Can you believe it? We're coming up on 300. We'll have to find a really good topic for episode 300. But we're having this live event. It's called Moderating After Leaving 12-Step Recovery. You don't have to want to moderate to come to that event. Yeah. I want to make that clear. This event is for people that want to move on and move on without fear, right? The goal of moving on after 12-step is to not be afraid of substances, not be afraid of going out with your friends, maybe old friends. It is to know that you've really solved your problem. Yeah. Okay. So if you're interested in that, then this live event is for you. And if you're watching us on YouTube, you can click below this and enroll now. And if you can't make the live event, so it's Thursday, July 16th at noon Eastern time, which is 5 o'clock in the UK. It is 9 a.m. on the East Coast, 5 p.m. in the UK.
I can't believe she can remember all that. I can never figure it out.
I am really good with time zones now.
She is. She's
like
awesome.
Really good. It took a while. It took me to figure it all out, but I figured it out. So you enroll. If you can't attend live, you will be able to see it later on by just going into that module when you enroll, and it'll be there, the recording of it. Yep. So
remember, if you're watching this episode years down the line,
right,
this is in 2026.
But if you want to know if we have any upcoming live events, you can always go to thefreedommodel.org.
Yeah.
Whenever we have a live event coming up, we always have a pop-up that will come up and say, hey, we're having this live event about this topic. Maybe you want to join us.
Yeah, we have a cool topic today. And, you know, our social media has kind of blown up in the last few months.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think that this idea of moderation is such a huge topic. Mm. And it's funny because we've known that because we went from abstaining for decades.
Yeah.
And being a part of AA, and then as researchers figuring out that that was kind of a sham, and slowly walking ourselves out of that into freedom, and then experimenting with use and realizing, oh, it was really anticlimactic. It's not a big deal. And we drink socially now occasionally with no issues. Nice. And what we found, obviously, in the research is that that's a very common experience. It's actually the most common way that people get over their problem, and they do it without treatment or any of that. So, but what's happened on our social media accounts is that it's really wild. You know, I personally, and I know this for Michelle as well, I don't go onto AA sites and try to downplay what they do or criticize what they do. Now, here's something that's interesting, though. There was a time in my life where I did.
Yeah.
There was a time in my life where I spent many years within AA going after AA in a way to say, hey, did you know this research? And myself and Michelle, we tried to change AA from within it. We thought it was salvageable.
Yeah.
And what we found is that it was a cult. Totally. So you know, as a cult, you're just not going to change the narrative because it's designed to stay the same. Stay with their
dog. It's like going into a religion and trying to change
a religion from within it.
Yeah, just doesn't work. So we spent a lot of time doing what people are now doing with us, which is they come into our world, onto our social media channels as members of AA, and they generally freak out and they criticize and they name call. And I have to block a lot of the really nasty people. But I thought about that and I was like, geez, that's so weird, you know, that people do that. But it's not weird. It's when you are piercing a paradigm with new information, there's always going to be pushback, and it's human nature to hang on to ideas. And one of the ideas is, I'll let Michelle talk about this, false dichotomy between willpower and the disease of addiction.
Well, one of the criticisms that we get is, so you're just saying all I had to do was quit, or all I have to do is reduce my use and I've solved my problem. You're saying that it's just a matter of willpower. You're saying that it's because I'm a bad person. So there's all of this misinformation that leads to this false dichotomy, which is it's either this or it's that. It's either a disease or it's willpower, and it's that you're a shitty person, right? That's why it's neither. Okay. And so I know we haven't done this topic in a really long time.
I don't know if we ever have as a topic.
Right. I mean, it's in the book. We talk about it in the book.
Yeah.
One of the biggest arguments for the disease concept is that we have to tell people it's a disease so they don't feel so bad about themselves. And the irony, okay, is that AA and the disease model is absolutely predicated on this is a moral issue. And no, because I think it's bad. Nobody should drink heavily. Nobody should use substances heavily. And if they do, it must be because they're sick.
And they have a moral failing, that it is a psychosocial, right?
spiritual
disease. And we talk about a catch-all term, literally every aspect of the human condition. And here's what's interesting. The disease concept is a moral concept because it's pseudoscience. It sounds scientific, but really what they're saying is you're weak. There's something wrong with your willpower. There's something wrong with your biology that renders you incapable of deciding for yourself. It renders you out of control when the substance enters you. And all of this is predicated on what? A spiritual malady, as Bill Wilson called it. Now, there's all this mixing of this pseudoscience and this religious, this first century Christian roots and the cult of the four absolutes and all these sort of the Oxford group leanings of early AA. And so what Bill Wilson did was he was incredibly smart as a marketer, and he built a disease based on woo-woo sort of spiritual concepts.
He did.
And he mixed the two. And he said, your recovery disease lore, right there, your recovery is dependent on your spiritual condition. There's no other disease that I know of where you have to go to meetings and serve others to get over your cancer. You don't have to go to meetings and talk about your problem that you had 20 years ago to get over your diabetes. That would be fucking weird, you know? But yet, this one area, we get into this strange world where we mix all these things together.
Yeah.
And so it's not a matter of willpower. The freedom model is not getting over substance use is not about willpower. And it's also not a disease. It's neither.
And it's also not a moral failing.
It has nothing to do with it.
It's not a spiritual sickness. We have known people who were devout religious people who struggled with substance use problems.
Yeah.
It's also not about being selfish. It's not about this self-will run riot. I mean, talk about talking out of both sides of your mouth, because to say that if I don't look at it as a disease, then I am calling you a bad person. AA calls people bad people all the time. The entire steps are predicated on figuring out your sins and confessing them to somebody else and then going and making amends to everybody, right? I mean, that in 12 steps, they outline what a shitty person you've been.
And nearly every step involves some spiritual or God-like scenario narrative. So
now, is everyone that has a substance use problem a saint? Of course not. Of course not. Nobody's saints. There's very few of us rise to that level on this planet. Okay. But substance use in and of itself, here's what I want to say. When I was in AA, I got to the point where I didn't understand, where I thought all substance use was bad. Did you get to that point?
Mm-hmm.
Where I, even if I saw regular somebody having a glass of wine, I would feel judgy. I started to feel judgy. Mm-hmm. Like, why would they want that? Like, that is bad. Like, oh, slippery slope. Like, you can't help but start to look at all substance use as being some kind of form of evil, something bad about it. That was what happened with me. And a lot of the people that I see coming onto our social media are there.
Oh yeah.
They're there because they're like, you're drunk. You're, you know, I can count on one hand the times that I've drank in the last 6 months. It's literally inconsequential to me.
Yeah. It means nothing.
It's not like, I don't even, it doesn't even occur to me to worry about it anymore. Now, did that happen right off the rip when I started experimenting? No. I had so much bullshit from AA, even after 20 years out of AA, probably was 15 years out of AA by the time we drank. There was still so much there that I had to unpack, that I had to figure out before I could get to this point where I was like, alcohol is really not a big deal. It's substances in general are not a big deal. Anyway, we'll get back on the topic of this idea that it has to be either or. And now Mark can start to explain that it's neither.
Yeah. So what is it? So over drinking or having a substance use problem, what is it? And getting over it, what does that mean? Right. So when we say that you can moderate, you can move past a substance use problem, we're not saying, or when you have it, we're not saying you have a disease. We're not saying it's a matter of willpower. There is no such thing as willpower, just like there's no such thing as procrastination. There are just choices that people are making. So when you take it out of the realm of labels,
yes,
right, where you box somebody in with a definition that they are out of control, they are bad, they have a problem with willpower, they're struggling, none of that is real. What is real, those are concepts, those are mental constructs that we've taught people to believe, which is why you're so confused. But what a substance use problem really is, first of all, is that you like getting drunk and high. That's not a lack of will. That is an act of will. So what Bill Wilson did is he said, self-knowledge availed us nothing. There's no mental capacity to get over the problem. You needed all this spiritual woo-woo stuff. But the reality is, drinking is an act of will. It is an act of something you want to do. You will it. You want it. So the answer is, how do I not want it?
Right.
And that is through analysis, not willpower. You're not fighting anything. You're analyzing. So there's a natural thing that happens with, you know, people that have what we call natural remission or spontaneous remission or quantum change. It's all these ridiculous. It's called just changing your fucking mind.
Right.
I mean, it's so ridiculously overcomplicated that we had to write a 470-page book to undo all the bullshit.
Yes.
It's so crazy. So it's not a disease. It's not a lack of willpower. It's not that you're a bad person. It's not any of this. These are just, I like to get drunk and high for personal reasons.
That are valid to me.
That are valid to me. Now, the question becomes, in the freedom model, are they legitimately, objectively true? Are you getting those benefits? What is the truth about substances and your relationship to them? And then analyzing that. Yeah. That's not an act of some sort of will, and it's just choosing. It's just understanding. So when you take it out of the realm of willpower and all these different concepts, what you're left with is a person, you, me, Michelle, making decisions about what do I like in my life and what do I want?
Yeah.
Because when you're getting totally fucking hammered every day, you want that. And people say, no, I don't. I said, that's not true, because you're doing it. You know, there isn't two people inside of you. There's just you making that decision based on an analysis that you've practiced for maybe 20 years. And so you're just kind of mindless about it. But the truth is, you still want it at some level. You want it more than not doing it. So then what is the answer? Is analyzing, do I still want this? But you got to get rid of this idea that there's some sort of battle, something to battle. There's no addiction present.
And that there's something inherently wrong with you. People have been wanting to get drunk and high forever. It is normal. Okay. To want to change your mental state is normal. And right from the beginning, these substances were misunderstood. A lot like, and we use this example in the book, a lot like the rain was misunderstood, right? There was this idea when you were growing crops that if you needed rain, you needed to do rain dances.
Right.
You needed
the Hopi Indians.
Needed to dance to bring on the rain. And substances were misunderstood because people would ingest certain things and they would act differently, or they would feel physically different when they would ingest them. So it felt magical. So right from the beginning, the interpretation was that something magical is happening to me. Well, we've, instead of like we did with the rain dance, figuring out, climate is what it is.
Right. Weather patterns.
And the weather patterns are what they are. And whether you dance or not, the rain isn't coming, you know, just because you do a certain dance. We didn't do that with substances. Unfortunately, the magic, there was more of a double down on it. And people that manufacture the substances figured out, if we make it seem very magical, we can sell a lot, right? And so we have all this marketing that talks about how the party comes in a bottle and how escape comes in a bottle or a pill bottle. And so we believe these things. And then when we ingest them, it feels real to us because something changes, because we physically feel different in our brains, and we interpret that in our mind as magical.
Yeah, we take a prop and we interpret the prop, the bottle, the needle, whatever, the prop in our body, and that feeling is a prop that we interpret some way. There are lots of people that get high and hate it.
And hate it. They don't
interpret
like it.
They interpret it as I feel this weird sensation in my body. I'm dizzy. I don't like this. Feel hot and sweaty or cold or whatever
it
might
be. Stick to my stomach.
Yeah,
or
nauseous or dizzy. And so that's what drugs, you know, if you look at it objectively, they affect you physically. And so somehow we took this whole experience of altering our physical states, and maybe the enjoyment or pleasure we receive from that for certain people. And we turned it into a moral failing. We turned it into a disease. We started labeling people and classifying people, real alcoholics, not real, heavy drinkers, problem drinker. You know, all these different things that don't really mean anything. In the end, it's human beings making a choice to interpret a physical sensation in the way that they want to have that sensation felt. They're interpreting it in their own way. That's not a moral failing. That's just an activity.
And I want you to consider something. And we do this kind of thing in our coaching. Okay. So if you're somebody that's thinking, yeah, but there are people, because I had somebody say this, there are people, why is it some people never, you know, maybe they party a lot when they were young and then they get over it. I want you to know that's about 70% of the population. Okay. When we look at the data, there's this, they do this monitoring the future study every single year. I think they're still doing it. I don't know if COVID derailed that or not. But what they found that between the ages of like 18 and 24, something like 70% of kids are binge drinkers, binge substance users. And so they fit the criteria for substance use disorder. 70%. That's a lot. Okay. When they get to the age of 30, it's dropped. It's cut in half. It's like 30%. And then when you get to the age of 40, it's down below 10%. None of these people went to rehab. Maybe a few of them did.
Yeah, very small percentage.
Ironically, of the 10% that still fit the category, I would guess that a bunch of them went to rehab. Okay. And because, and then they got the labels and they started interpreting their strong preference for intoxication as a disorder and a disease, and that they're different or they process it differently. You don't process it differently. That's not what causes this. Well, addiction exists in the mind. So I want you to think about when you're thinking about there are some people that seem to have a problem with other people don't. Well, the same people can have a problem in one stage of life and not in another. The same people can have two drinks on a night and 10 drinks on a different night. Okay. That's not a disease. That's people choosing.
And even in a bar with heavy drinking going on, if you watch people, same molecule being ingested across the board, doesn't matter if you're drinking beer or Hennessy, right? It metabolizes into the same identical compound in every human being. So we have an amazing experiment that you can take. Just go to a bar and you'll see people behave completely differently under quote unquote the influence. And some people act completely normal. Some people get sexualized. Some people get violent. Some people cry. Some people are laughing hysterically. It's every range of emotion because they're interpreting their prop in a different way. And it's an individual experience. So let's get back to the topic at hand with all this information. So when we say it's not a disease, it doesn't automatically mean we're telling you that you're a bad person. What we're saying, because you chose this, what we're saying is it's not a disease and you use in the way you want to use.
And for your reasons.
For your reasons. And you interpret it in your way that you want to interpret it. And a great example of this would be if you're doing hallucinogens and you go into hallucinogenics in a really bad mood, you're going to have a bad experience. So a lot of people prepare themselves beforehand. And we do the same thing when we go to a bar. Yes. Or sometimes, like me, in my violent days, I would get drunk and get beer muscles, right? It's where now I'm going to go out and get in a fight. And I was preparing for that. And I used the alcohol as an excuse for me to feel different, which then I supposedly gave me courage, when in reality, it was just me using a prop. And then I was thinking something. The point is, your relationship to substances are not a disease, but they are also not a moral failing. Now, if you decide to smoke crack and rob a house, that's on you. That's not the drug making you do that. That's you saying, I'd rather rob a house and get money quick and go get high. And it's a price I'm willing to pay to get caught. And we have prices and costs in life that we're willing to pay for all kinds of things. Now, also, if you're beating your wife every time you get drunk, which there are guys out there that do dumb shit like that, really awful things, you're just a jerk. I mean, it has not the alcohol may be the excuse, but the reality is that you do have a moral problem, but it has nothing to do with the alcohol. That's just your excuse that you might use.
And the same can be said about a woman who uses alcohol to speak her mind. and maybe get mean to the husband, the kids, everybody.
Great example.
It's not, and then they blame the alcohol. The alcohol made me that way. Well, on the day before, the alcohol made you funny and flirtatious and sexual. It can't do both things, right? That's what our workshop is all about. It helps people to see the things you're believing. It helps people to challenge the things you believe about alcohol, the reasons that you have for why you like it. Because here's the thing. We don't judge people. There's no judgment in the freedom model, because if substances really did the things people believe they do, why wouldn't you want to do it?
Yeah. And the experiences would be linear and universal, right? Everybody would behave in a certain way if the chemical actually did that to the brain and made you A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah.
But the research shows that that's just not the case.
Yeah.
There are many, many millions of people that got drunk and high and just said, you know what, that's not for me. So an example is pleasure's not inherent in the drug, and addictiveness is not inherent in opiates. When you have 100 million prescriptions and only 2% of those people end up with a problem, the rest of the people use the drugs for pain and then get over it, you know? And that's even with withdrawal present.
Yeah.
So you have all these narratives that are bullshit. So it's not a disease. And drinking and drugging is also, you're not a bad person for wanting to get drunk and high. Now, you may do asshole things, like we said. That's a different topic entirely.
Because a lot of people that get drunk and high don't.
Right.
Okay. That's just the reality. Yeah. The vast majority don't do asshole things. Right. That was the thing they used to say in AA. If you want an instant asshole, just add alcohol. And it's like, no, not for most of us.
No, not at all. Not at all. I had a lot of good times drinking.
I did too. I was a pretty fun person most of the time.
I was too. Until AA and treatment got a hold of me. And then the narrative became paramount and I lost myself in it.
Yeah.
So it's really, really important to understand. It's almost impossible for people that are immersed in the treatment model to understand what we're saying.
Yeah.
And I say this with all my videos. You're not going to understand this until you read our book. You're not going to understand this until you watch the Solution to Addiction workshop. There's these things that we've developed to help you understand what the hell is actually happening.
Yeah.
You know,
and yes, we figured it out.
Yeah,
we did figure it out. Yes. I mean, people kind of mock us for it, but we did. and they're like, you're saying your way is the only way. No,
we're saying reality doesn't budge.
We're saying that you can solve your problem without the bullshit. That's what we're saying. And that everybody solves their problem the exact same way.
And always have.
And always has. And that's changing their mind. You change your mind. You decide. You know what? I am happier not being drunk and high. I like my life better. They don't see value at that moment in going and getting drunk and high. Okay. I don't see value in that anymore. I haven't in a really long time. And so we're not saying that when we say it's not a disease, we're not saying that the people that struggle are bad. We're not even saying that there's not a struggle. A lot of people struggle with substances, but they struggle because of misinformation. They struggle because of the beliefs they have about themselves, about the substance, and about addiction.
Yeah. It's not a disease. You're not a bad person. You're confused.
That's it.
So that's a huge difference. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing broken about you. There's none of that. That's not to say that humans don't have character flaws and all kinds of fucked up stuff in their life, because I certainly am a flawed guy, and we're humans doing the best we know how to do. But I can tell you this, that when you shed the addict and alcoholic identity, when you shed that I have a disease I can't control, when you shed powerlessness
and shame and guilt.
Oh, yeah.
You got to get rid of that shit,
because that clouds all your analysis. And we're going to have that brings me to another topic. We're going to have a moderation program that, and I'm currently building it, and it's going to be moderating your drinking or drug use with the Freedom Model. That's the title of it. And this is going to be huge because nobody has been willing to actually address moderation comprehensively.
Kind of the elephant in the room, so to speak.
Yeah, because they're still hanging on to vestiges of the moral and the pseudo medical model, which are actually one and the same.
Yeah.
And we threw it out because it's bullshit. And so anybody can moderate, but not everybody has the information to do so successfully.
And not everybody wants to, right? Like there are a lot of people that don't see value in alcohol unless they're drunk. And I didn't for a long time, quite frankly. I was one of those people. I did not understand moderate alcohol use, moderate drug use. I did not understand any of it. You know, what's interesting though, when I started to understand moderate drug use was when I had major surgery and had to go on, opiates. And it was something that I had used in the past, to be high. And it's a completely different mindset, right? When, you know, this idea that, well, of course I can use them as prescribed. And the vast majority of people can, right? 99% of people use opiates as prescribed. So much so that they did a campaign about people having leftover opiates in their medicine cabinets that were dangerous. And it's like, they can't be dangerous and people don't finish them. I mean, confusing,
yeah,
right?
You can't be addicted if there's all these unused scripts. Yeah, it's just classic confusion and classic blind spots in the industry of their mythology.
Yeah.
So we've danced all over the place in this podcast because it's such a massive topic of moralism and disease that gets mixed and confused, and people are in that and they're feeling powerless and they're feeling broken and they're labeled. And to undo that, read it.
Please look at it's, if you want to get the digital version, it's $12.99. It's $12.99 on the freedommodel.org.
Save your life.
And there's an audio book available on the freedommodel.org as well. Or you can get this on Amazon. There's a Kindle edition. It's in Audible. It's available on Spotify. You can find it, and we go through all of this in detail in here.
All right, everybody. I hope you have a great day, and I hope you join us for the event.
Yes.
And so sign up.
Go to thefreedommodel.org. There should be a pop-up there if you want to enroll, or if you're watching this on YouTube, click the link below.
All right, everybody. Have a great day.
Bye.